2 Kings chapter 2 verse 1. And it came to pass, when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. And Elijah said unto Elisha, Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said unto him, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. And the sons of the prophets that were at Bethel came forth to Elisha and said unto him, Knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy matter from thy head today? And he said, Yea, I know it. Hold ye your peace. And Elijah said unto him, Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent thee to Jericho. And he said, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they came to Jericho. And the sons of the prophets that were at Jericho came to Elisha and said unto him, Knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? And he answered, Yea, I know it. Hold ye your peace. And Elijah said unto him, Tarry, I pray thee here, for the Lord hath sent me to Jordan. And he said, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And they two went on. And 50 men of the sons of the prophets went, and stood to view afar off, and they stood by Jordan. And Elijah took his mantle and wrapped it together, and smote the waters, and they were divided hither and thither, so that they two went over on dry ground. And it came to pass, when they were gone over, that Elijah said unto Elisha, Ask what I shall do for thee, before I be taken away from thee. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. And he said, Thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me, when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be so. And it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire, and horses of fire, and parted them asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it, and he cried, my father, the chariot of Israel, and the horsemen thereof. And he saw him no more. And he took hold of his own clothes, and rent them in two pieces. He took up also the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and went back, and stood by the bank of Jordan. And he took the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and smote the waters, and said, Where is the Lord God of Elijah? And when he also had smitten the waters, they parted hither and thither, and Elisha went over. And when the sons of the prophets, which were to view at Jericho, saw him, they said, The spirit of Elijah doth rest on Elisha. And they came to meet him, and bowed themselves to the ground before him. We considered last evening in 1 Corinthians chapter 19 the call of Elisha, when in fact the mantle of Elijah was offered to him. Now in 2 Kings chapter 2, it's not the mantle offered, it's the mantle taken. In 1 Kings chapter 19, you remember, the mantle was cast on Elisha, but he went back to kiss his father and his mother. Between 1 Kings chapter 19 and 2 Kings chapter 2, it would appear that Elisha was serving a kind of apprenticeship. But now in 2 Kings chapter 2, it must be proved that Elisha would take up the mantle and go forward, not go back. And we're going to see that Elisha, he passes the test. In 2 Kings chapter 2, the time has arrived for Elijah to be taken into heaven, and Elisha be left on his own to serve God in the most evil and difficult circumstances. What a memorable journey this must have been for Elisha, as he traveled with Elijah from Gilgal to Bethel to Jericho and then to the Jordan. He had to contend with the repeated testing of Elijah. Said Elijah at Gilgal, "Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel." And again at Bethel, Elijah said yet again, "Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Jericho." And once more at Jericho, Elijah says to Elisha, "Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Jordan." Now I repeat, this was a test for Elisha. It wasn't that Elijah desired Elisha to tarry at these places. He was presenting Elisha a test on this particular journey. That test terminated at Jericho. There was no test of that nature thereafter. Once through the Jordan, Elijah's next step was into the chariot of fire and up to heaven. Thither, of course, Elisha could not follow. It was the parting of the ways. The master would go to heaven, and the disciple would have to continue his work here on earth. There was yet another test. There was the test of the sons of the prophets at Bethel and at Jericho, when they said to Elisha, "Knowest thou not that Jehovah will take away thy master from thy heart, from thy head today?" In other words, they were simply saying to Elisha, "Why follow a man that is going to leave you?" That was their test. Elisha, where is the sense of following a man that's going to leave you? Elisha replied, "Yea, I know it. Hold ye your peace." He made it clear to him that his devotion to the master was in fact unswerving. The language of 2 Kings chapter 2 is very beautiful. Verse 1 says, Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. Verse 2, so they went down to Bethel. Verse 6, and the two went on. Verse 7, and the two stood by Jordan. Verse 8, the two went over. Verse 11, they still went on and talked. So beautiful. He went with Elisha. They went down. They went on. They went over. And they went on and talked. I'm sure this was a journey that Elisha would never forget. Might I say, young brother, young sister, you keep the company of those who will help you in the things of God. And Elisha benefited from this journey, and I'm sure he never forgot the memorable things he learned from the lips of Elijah on this particular last journey. And thus, Elisha, he survives every test. Verse 11, they still went on, and the verse tells us Elijah went up. They went on, and Elijah went up. The places that they visited were fraught with interest. And I've no doubt in my mind that Elijah, with a sad heart, would point out to Elisha the dreadful state of each of these places and remind Elisha of both ancient and recent sacred memories connected with each of these places. I have no doubt that to some large extent this occupied the conversation of Elijah, pointing out, I repeat, no doubt with a sad heart to Elisha, the terrible state of these places and remind him of sacred memories connected with these places, memories both ancient and recent. As for Gilgal, the first place that is mentioned, what about Gilgal? We discover that the prophet Amos tells us that Israel's transgressions were multiplied there. Amos tells us in chapter 4 of his prophecy in verse 4 that at Gilgal, Israel's transgressions were multiplied there. And he predicts in chapter 5 of his prophecy and verse 5, I think it is, that Israel would in fact go into captivity. That was Gilgal at this time. Yet here was a place that should have been of both hallowed and grateful memory to the children of Israel. You remember? It was just here, upon entering the promised land, that the nation encamped. And two matters connected with Gilgal they should never have forgotten. Number one was this. It was at Gilgal that the reproach of Egypt was rolled away. That they should never have forgotten. And secondly, from Gilgal, by God's command, they marched to conquer Canaan. These are matters that they should never have forgotten. But here it was now, Israel's transgressions were multiplied there. And soon the nation who entered Canaan by way of Gilgal to conquer it and possess it, they're going to be carried away in captivity. The next place they touched was Bethel. We've seen already in these meetings, or last night at least, that at Bethel there was the king's chapel. At Bethel, there was a house of high places. At Bethel, there was also a calf of gold. There it was set up as an object of worship. Think of it, my dear brethren. At Bethel, a king's chapel, a house of high places, a calf of gold had been set up as an object of worship. And as it must be in any state chapel, as I mentioned last evening, priests were humanly ordained. And these priests were told, appointed by Jeroboam, were of the lowest of the people. Let me remind you that we come to the prophecy of Isaiah. The Lord spoke contemptuously of Bethel. Think of the Lord speaking contemptuously of Bethel. Bethel, which means the house of God. And we discover that in Hosea chapter 4, verse 15, the Lord speaks of it by another name, Beth Haven. Bethel becomes Beth Haven. Maybe remember the meaning of the name Beth Haven. It means the house of folly. How tragic to think that the house of God has now become a house of folly. May I just say, my dear brethren, the declension of those days has undoubtedly repeated itself in our days. It cannot be again said that in many instances the house of God has become little more than a house of folly. Here was Bethel, that ought to be of sacred and indeed unforgettable memory associated with Jacob, where the important matter of the house of God was initiated. Let me remind you, it was at Bethel that the important matter of the house of God was initiated. And it was there that Jacob received a unique revelation, when God gave Jacob certain very important pledges. Let me remind you what he said to Jacob at Bethel. I am the Lord God of Abraham thy father, and the God of Jacob. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. I will bring thee into this land, for I will not leave thee, until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. But now, here at Bethel, all that had been forgotten, and the house of God has become a house of folly. The dreadfulness of the house of God to the flesh was now a thing of the past. And former fear becomes a matter of folly. I would not like to deliberate on that, my dear brethren. But surely this is characteristic of so many of us today. The dreadfulness of the house of God to the flesh is completely forgotten. And instead of reverential fear, alas, there is excessive folly. The next place they touched was Jericho. Jericho had been rebuilt. It had been destroyed. But now it had been rebuilt. And we learn from chapter 2, verse 19, that it was now a pleasant place. Rebuilt and a pleasant place. It had been rebuilt despite the adjuration of Joshua in Joshua chapter 6, verse 26. Let me remind you of that adjuration. It said, Joshua, cursed be the man before the Lord that riseth up and buildeth the city Jericho. He shall lay the foundation thereof in his firstborn, and in his youngest shall he set up the gates of it. And you will remember that during the reign of King Ahab, Hiel the Bethelite openly defied God and built Jericho again. My dear brethren, no one can openly defy God without coming under the government of God. And the curse that was pronounced on anyone who would rebuild Jericho was realized in the experience of that man Hiel the Bethelite. Thus we read in 1 Kings chapter 16 verse 34 that he laid Jericho's foundation in Abiram, his firstborn. When he laid the foundation of Jericho to build it again, Abiram, his firstborn, died. God said it would be so. And furthermore, and set up the gates thereof in his youngest son, Segub. When he set up the gates of Jericho, his youngest son died. And that verse adds words that are important to remember. According to the word of the Lord, which is spake by Joshua, the son of Nun. My dear brethren, let me repeat. We cannot defy God. We cannot build what God has destroyed without bringing upon us the disfavor of God and bring upon us the government of God. Hiel the Bethelite had proved that. But here was Jericho, that city, that had witnessed those seven priests with ram's horns, followed by the Ark of the Covenant, marched round its wall, preceded and followed by armed men of Israel. And you remember, they marched around the city during 7 days, the priests blowing the trumpets, and on the seventh day, when the trumpets were blown, on the command of Joshua, the people shouted, and the great wall fell down flat, and the city was cursed, and was utterly destroyed. Here was something of comparatively recent history. That should have remained in the memory of Israel. All of that appears to be forgotten. They ought to remember how wondrously God had worked on their behalf. He worked on the behalf of the most inadequately equipped army of the Israelites. They weren't equipped for battle at all. But God worked on their behalf most wondrously. And there had been a great victory. But now, God has been defied. And they've rebuilt what God had cursed. They rebuilt what God said should never have been rebuilt. So much for Jericho. They now come to Jordan. As for Jordan, how strange it must have been for Elisha and Elijah to pass through Jordan. You think of Elisha witnessing Elijah take up his mantle, wrap it together, smite the waters, and those waters divided hither and thither. Not on this occasion to allow a redeemed people to pass through, to take possession of their possession, but to allow a prophet, rejected by that nation, a nation which was now desperately evil, to pass out of the promised land, and Elisha with him. I wonder if we could imagine the thoughts and feelings of Elijah, and particularly Elisha, as they too share an identical crossing to that of the nation. We're told they too went over on dry ground. An identical crossing, as did the nation, who too went over on dry ground. But here are two prophets going in the opposite direction. What feelings those two men must have had. Now that the Jordan is passed, Elisha has withstood every test. He has proved conclusively his consuming desire to take possession of Elijah's mantle, his mantle of service, that the lesson of the first call had now been learned. Elisha, there must be no going back. Elisha is promised a blessing by Elijah. Said Elijah to Elisha, verse 9 of chapter 2, "Ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee." And Elisha no doubt ponders, and he gives an amazing reply. Verse 9, "I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me." "Why," said Elijah, "thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me, when I'm taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be so." Verse 10. The blessing is promised. And here was a final test. A test of a different nature. And what was that? "Elisha, if thou shalt see me, when I'm taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee." If up to this point, Elisha had refused to be parted from Elijah, now, with even deeper intensity, Elisha would keep his eye fixed on his master, and we're told in verse 11, they still went on and talked. And one can well imagine how that Elisha, with deeper intensity, keeps his eye on Elijah the prophet. Elisha's request for a double portion of Elijah's spirit not only showed Elisha's appreciation of his master, it was in fact a request for the firstborn portion. That we must not forget. When Elisha asked of Elijah for a double portion of his spirit, I repeat, it not only indicated Elisha's deep appreciation of Elijah, it was in fact a request for the firstborn portion. You may remember the law of Deuteronomy 21, verses 15 to 17 was this, that the firstborn son, even though his mother be hated, must be given the double portion of the firstborn, which was a double honour. For, says Deuteronomy, he is the beginning of his father's strength, and he must worthily represent him. Thus, Elisha's ambition was a worthy one. He would seek to worthily represent his master once his master had gone. Now I want to pause just for a moment. One could wish that this particular spirit had been much more abroad in the last few decades. Instead of the increasing ambition to destroy everything traditional and in the old country to the point of establishing research in order so to do, and the ministry of faithful godly men over the years is being disregarded today, and scorn is poured on the ministry of godly men. The writings of Mr. Vine, of Mr. Hogg, of E.W. Rogers, and godly men of that nature, why they say, they're all wrong. That's old-fashioned, and that's out of date, and they're discarded. And I feel, brethren, that in many of the assemblies today, that is almost the spirit of the communist that obtains in the world of politics? Is it bettering the assemblies in any way? Not wishing to scar those men who've gone before us? Instead of seeking worthily in a world like this to represent them. That was Elisha's ambition, that he might worthily represent the master who was going to heaven. Elisha, of course, did not fail this last test. This last test given him by his master. Elisha's eye was fixed. He saw the chariot of fire and the horses of fire. And Elisha got to heaven in a whirlwind, as we read. Proof that he was now ready to put on Elijah's mantle is seen in this. That when in 1 Kings chapter 19, Elijah cast his mantle upon Elisha, and evidently to take it back again, because Elisha, he said, let me kiss my father. Now in 2 Kings chapter 2, it is rather different. He watches Elijah transported to heaven. And you remember how he cried? He cried after Elijah, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. What is the significance? In 1 Kings chapter 19, he looked back on a natural father and wanted to kiss a natural father. But here in 2 Kings chapter 2, he looks up to a spiritual father, going to heaven with his great ambition that he might worthily represent him. Now there must be no going back. The spiritual has taken precedence over the natural. I've no doubt that these chariots of fire and horses of fire refer to angelic ministrations. I believe that's the answer to the question. Remember Hebrews chapter 1, said the writer concerning angels, who maketh his angels spirits and his ministers a flame of fire. I've often thought in connection with this delightful incident that Elijah here is a beautiful word of God here to represent Christ. In this connection, notice these matters. 2 Kings chapter 2 verse 8 says, Elijah and Elisha went through Jordan together on dry ground. And thus there is Elijah, a type of Christ. Elisha, a type of the child of God. They go through Jordan, the place of death, together. Says the apostle in Colossians chapter 2, verse 20, wherefore, if ye be dead with Christ from the rudiments of the world, and we have passed through Jordan with Christ, we have died with Christ from the rudiments of the world. Colossians chapter 2 verse 10, said Elijah, if thou see me, when I'm taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. Verse 12 says, Elijah saw it. Moving into Colossians chapter 3, what do we find? Why says the apostle, if ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above. Set your affection on things above. Have your mind and eye fixed on Christ. Then further, verse 12 of 2 Kings chapter 2 says this, Elisha took hold of his own clothes and rent them in pieces. He took off his own garments and rent them in pieces. Thus says Paul in Colossians chapter 3 verse 10, seeing you put off the old man with his deeds, you've put off as a garment the old man with his deeds. But it doesn't finish there. 2 Kings 2 verse 13 reads like this. Elisha took up the mantle of Elijah that fell from him. And thus the apostle goes on to say in Colossians 3 verse 10, and hath put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge. Thus we have died with Christ. Christ fills our vision. We're finished with the old man, and we put on the new man, just as Elisha put off his old garments and put on the garments of the man that had been caught up in a whirlwind. Elijah's day of service down here is over. As for Elisha, he must go back to serve the Lord. But he goes back to serve alone, possessed of Elijah's spirit. And Elisha, he will now retrace alone the steps over the very ground he had just covered with his master. And that's what Elisha does. His master has gone to heaven. He's left to serve God, possessed of the spirit of his master. And he now retraces the same ground he'd covered with his master. Gilgal, Bethel, Jericho, and Jordan. And he does it now alone. He commences, obviously, Jordan, then to Jericho, then to Bethel, and ultimately to Gilgal. Now let's think of this. In 2 Kings 2, verses 13 and 14, Elisha returns to Jordan. And the question we ask is this: